This is the September 11 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee, Elaine Cub from ElaineCub.com from Ipswich, South Dakota, and Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report in Kansas City, Missouri, along with Jackie Bakes of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Let's begin our conversation. I asked Jackie Bakes of Total Farm Marketing what she thought of the report when she very first laid eyes on it.
What I thought right away was, well, this is a report that's going to make the market go higher, at least for now. You know, will it be able to hold its gains into the close? That's going to be the big question. And probably the biggest question that looms in my mind is, with the gains that we have seen, especially in the bean market, will China continue to buy? So, we really had a great reaction, but we have not. You know, it's tough to hang on to reactions like that. In all my years around here, I've seen everybody get so bullish and so excited and then have the close of the day be disappointing. It just makes for a tough situation.
So we are talking before the close of the trade on Friday, so everybody knows what time we're in the midst of here. When you saw that, I suspect you went back and looked, because I know you well enough to see how often we had this big a change in the numbers, especially for yield and the crop production figures.
Yeah, this was big, Todd. I'll tell you, we saw, you know, corn yield go down by 3.3 bushels, which was, you know, a little. It came in higher than the average guess, but it still was 1.8% drop, and that's the largest we've seen on a September report since 2011. On beans, we went down by 1.4 bushels, and that's a 2.6% drop, and that is the largest drop that we've seen since 2013. So this is definitely a significant report. I looked at when they surveyed, and they surveyed from the 29th of August till the 7th of September. And I was interested to see how many farmers they actually talked to. And they talked to 9,140 farmers. They did 3,930 field surveys. And their satellite was focused strictly on the corn area for this particular report. So some of the big changes that are driving what's going on is Iowa harvested corn acres went down by 1 million. And Nebraska went down by 350 million. We did have some adjustments up in some of the others, but not enough to make a difference. And this objective yield that we saw on this corn report is higher than we saw in either 16 or 17 for the September report. So all of those things are significant. When you look at beans, harvested acres, this was interesting. Didn't see any loss of harvested acres anywhere, but we saw it go up in Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Indiana, and Nebraska. And so the objective yield was higher than 15, 16, and 17 September reports. And so, you know, there's lots of meat to chew on when you're looking at what's going on today.
So you say that it's important to kind of figure out how to hold on to the gains that are made. That'll be important for today. But what are some of the technical points that the market needs to take a stand at?
Well, if you're still sitting on December 20 and haven't made the sales, we need to close above that 367 3/4. That's the 62% retracement and move down. We just don't have a choice. I mean, we have to have that close to give us any kind of gumption for going higher unless something happens. When you look at beans, there's more latitude there. We need to close above 982 on November beans, and currently, as we're talking here, we're at 991.5. We had a high of 998, which was a nearby new contract high, but the actual contract high for the whole life of that contract is 1005. So beans are likely to hang on. It's just corn that's the big one that I'm concerned about more than anything else. And so people keep that in mind. You know, I'm worried today about what guys have done, you know, on this current crop that's coming in. Have you made the sales? Have you rewarded what we've had going on?
And if they have not?
Well, they better darn well do that, you know, because I mean, come on. You know, I'm a big one for scale in sales, and that's what I've been doing on anybody who had old crop left yet, and we've just been scaling up. You know, we can't spend our time worrying about the fact that the market went up another 3 cents today and we sold yesterday. It's all about what is the market, what and when will we find a place where this market stops moving higher? And, you know, you always have the ability to buy a call. The minute you make the sale, it ends your interest, it ends your storage costs. There's just so many good things. And you cannot let something as big as the moves we've seen here just go by without rewarding it.
All right. And before I end with you, Jackie, can you go back and summarize the numbers as they were released from USDA for both the crop production and the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates today?
Sure. Ending stock-wise, we looked at corn and the ending stocks on 2019 came at a 2.253, which was higher than what we saw in August. So there was an adjustment up. Beans came in at 575, which was actually 40 million lower than the August. Now, this was on the 1920. When we looked at 21, we came in at 2.5 billion bushel carryout, higher than the average guess, but lower than August. Beans, 460, significantly lower. We were at 610 in August. And so you look at wheat, we came in within one bushel of where we were back in August. World ending stocks, 309 on corn. We were at 311 in August. Beans up a little, 96 compared to 95.9, so hardly anything. Wheat, 299.8 compared to 300, just down slightly. And when you look at this, that's 1920. When you look at 2021, 306 on corn, significantly lower than August by 11 million metric tons. Beans down 2 million metric tons approximately, and wheat up about 2 million metric tons. Some of the changes that they made, Todd, which I thought were very interesting, feed they dropped by 100 million, and we all know on corn, now I'm talking 2021, feed is what we would call the miscellaneous category. So to me, that's the category that says we're not really sure, but this is what we're going to do. They dropped ethanol by 100 million, but they increased exports by 100 million. And, you know, we saw the crop go down in size. So that's why we ended up dropping to 7. We're actually at 17.1% stocks to use from 18.7 last month, but we're still higher than we were last year at this time. So they dropped we saw the corn price go from 310 to 350. So it did come up, but it's not as high as it was last year. When you look at the bean side of things, Todd, you know, we of course had a lower carry-in because of adjustments made in 1920. We had a lower crop coming in. And slight move on seed exports stayed the same, and therefore that's where the 150 million. But the significant number is 10.4% stocks to use ratio compared to 13.7 last month and 14.7 last year. So that bumped the average cash price for beans from 8.35 up to 9.25. Pretty significant move all the way around. And we really didn't have anything. Their carryout numbers stayed the same as last month. And the world numbers are all affected by, you know, everything that's going on everywhere. But we saw, like I said, the corn drop. We're actually 3 million lower than we were a year ago. And that was an 11 million metric ton drop from this year. And with the bean number is lower than it was a year ago. It's also lower than it was last month. And that's significant because they actually raised the Brazilian bean production up to 133 million metric tons, 7 million metric tons higher than the average guess. And they increased their corn number up to 110 million metric tons. And that was 9 million metric tons higher than the average guess. And yet we still came in with a lower stocks to use ratio. So in the big picture of things, I'm glad that this report is behind us. Now we'll start to hear some really real numbers coming out of the fields. And I think the USDA has certainly did what everybody expected them to do and make the adjustments that were needed to be done.
Thanks, Jackie. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Now, Elaine Cubb, Jackie mentioned a couple of changes, both for exports and ethanol in the corn market. What'd you make of those changes?
Yeah, I know the September report is usually supposed to just be about yield and production, and that's what everybody is laser focused on. But I think it's interesting to dig into the demand numbers this month too, because these are a changing scenario. And the exports, they raised that for corn from 2.2 billion bushels to 2.325 billion bushels of corn being exported. And I suspect this is entirely related to Chinese buying of corn, which, if you back that up from China's own harvest problems this fall, they have typhoons coming, and sort of that wet harvest weather that we experienced last year is now challenging their yields this year. I suspect that's what's leading their buying of U.S. corn, and that has been helpful. We've seen, alongside the record strong pace of soybean buying, there's also the Chinese corn buying, and that's leading in here. So that was a favorable change. But simultaneously, they made an unfavorable change to the ethanol usage here in the United States, going from 5.2 billion bushels to 5.1 billion bushels. Doesn't sound like a lot. However, I've been looking at the idea that just gasoline usage, fuel usage in the United States after this COVID lockdown has never fully recovered. The demand or the consumption indicators of fuel usage in the United States seem to be plateauing. And if we're just limping along here at ethanol production, something like 922,000 barrels per day, if this continues all through the 2020-21 marketing year, I suspect these ethanol demand numbers could move even lower over time.
I want to turn your attention now to the supply side, but not particularly what happened in the USDA reports today, but something that they did write about, which was that frost that came earlier in the month, was not included in today's figures. And you're there in South Dakota. What does it look like?
Yeah, so it's a September frost. It's not out of the realm of possibility here in the Dakotas. But there were soybeans that were still green, you know, they had not entirely turned. And so you drive around just my local vicinity right now, and there are crisped up soybeans that did get damaged by the frost and will take some of the yield potential off of that. Of course, overall, the USDA did drop soybean yields nationwide. I don't think necessarily for the Dakotas, so there hasn't necessarily been time to factor in that frost damage, and even that may not be a huge market mover. I think overall, we've got a pretty good handle on soybean production prospects, with the biggest damage coming from the drought through August, and not a huge market mover from that frost here in September in the Dakotas.
I do want to ask each of you about marketing, both corn and soybeans. USDA did a pretty good change in what they think will happen. In fact, soybeans up, 90 cents or thereabouts to 925 now. That's a big jump over where it was just a month ago.
Well, and I think that's justified given that drought in August. You have a drought in August in the middle of the Corn Belt. That is not going to be good for soybean production. And we've seen a big change in trend in soybean prices. And so we do see futures. The September contract is above $10. We're seeing some of the 2021 contracts also peaking above $10 in the futures market. So you back off some basis and a 925 cash goal is perhaps not a bad goal for farmers to have for marketing. But I would caution anybody, as you're looking at a price to market what soybeans you don't already have sold, you want to make a new goal, don't get too greedy or don't expect these prices to stick around too long, because if the La Nina effects fade from South America and they plant record large acres, which is highly expected, and you start to get, you know, more into the next calendar year when the market starts to focus on South American production and all of these Chinese buying is mostly transacted than that is in the past rather than in the future, I think it's certainly possible that the soybean market is going to move back down away from $10 after hitting it here now.
So you're worried at this point about soybeans. And in particular, do you think that the trade has built in more La Nina problem than U.S. and South America problem than potential than what's actually happening in the United States?
No, I think the trade so far has been a reflection of North American soybean production and the August drought and the continuous and legitimate, you know, bona fide hedging from the commercial traders that are selling all of these soybeans to China. I think the days when we see these big double-digit gains are the days when we're also seeing 400,000 some metric tons of soybeans being sold. So that's all straightforward. But I'm just saying, once we get past this $10 level, as we go forward and the buying is behind us, I don't necessarily think that that La Nina story from South America is going to be able to sustain this rally months into the future.
Any simple advice for corn marketing?
Right. I wouldn't expect any sort of a rally like that from corn. You know, keep in mind that even these little adjustments they made to the exports and a slight drop in the yield, you're still looking at a stocks-to-use ratio of 17% for corn. So there is enough corn to go around. Even with the record large sales to China, there is still enough corn that is going to keep the buyers in the market from feeling anything too tight or any sort of price restriction.
That was Elaine Cub of ElaineCub.com out of Ipswich, South Dakota. I spoke to her earlier in the day, just after the USDA report was released. About an hour later, I talked with Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report out of Kansas City, Missouri. I turned his attention to the world marketplace and what USDA said about supply and demand around the planet, and asked him particularly about South America, Brazil, and planting intentions, and his perspective on how that might move the market.
Yeah, Todd, for corn, I kind of pretty much as expected, USDA came out and bumped Brazil's new crop estimate higher by, I believe it was about 3.0 million metric tons, and they dropped Ukraine by a million metric tons, left Argentina unchanged. I think on the soybean side of things, you know, we've seen type of similar, I think we were all kind of bracing for it. Brazil, bumped a little bit higher. Like I said, Argentina left mostly unchanged. As far as wheat, I think we'd seen the same type of estimates. You'd seen some higher production numbers coming out of Canada and Australia. And like I said, again, Argentina was lower to touch on some frost and things. But mostly the USDA numbers, I think, were as expected for most of the people in the trade. I'm with you. I think there is the possibility of some wild weather. I think La Nina is, you know, always a little bit of a wild card. I know some of the bears will say it should bring some added moisture to parts of South America, but there's some areas in Central Brazil and some other places. But we're going to keep our eye on some things that conditions could get a little bit dry, maybe into Argentina and some other areas. So I think that's what's got the soybean bulls in control here. I kind of wrote in this morning's report, I stayed bullish in my soybean positions. I had exited my corn positions last night, and just because I wasn't sure how the USDA would play this yield and these harvested acres. But I thought maybe soybean bulls kind of had them pinned either way. And I think, not to get off subject, Todd, but to just give you my idea on the soybean thing, I think a lot of people were calling in this morning asking why we ran higher here with the USDA numbers. I think a lot of the bulls think that they didn't raise exports and they didn't raise crush, so they think that's coming around the next corner. And there was no change in harvested acres either. So from a bullish perspective, from my perspective, it's sitting here at a fairly tight balance sheet or a tighter balance sheet. And I think it can only get tighter as we head into year end. So, you know, on your world numbers, I think they're pretty much as expected. Everyone's going to give South America the benefit of the doubt going into this. They got some of the highest soybean prices they've ever seen, and they're going to plant the acres. It's just now a matter of how La Nina plays out and what happens with the weather.
So am I correct in hearing you that fundamentally you believe this is still a larger number for soybeans on production in the United States than the final will be, or maybe the next couple will be, and that you also expect demand to increase?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Like I said, and everybody, on the trade, when all traders always say, we all talk our own positions. So I'm sitting here holding some bullish positions, and I'm bullish. I think there's, I think you got to be careful here. I'd be cautious being short, because I think it's going to be a demand-driven rally. And like I said, demand-driven rallies, we get the balance sheet down here sub 400. All you need is a little bit of talk out of Brazil or South America that they're going to have some production type of hiccups. And, we'll take off, especially because I feel the funds, and I know the funds are holding their record position in beans, but they can stay irrational a lot longer and people can stay solvent. So I think you have to be cautious being caught bearish this thing. And I know there's a lot of advisors out there that, let's make sure you're clear, Todd. Now, I'm talking from a spec perspective. As a producer, I made some sales into the rally and I did raise my floor. So You know, I think there's just a big, big difference between being a speculator and a producer, and we have to be cognizant of that fact. So, yeah, I think the balance sheet's going to get tighter as we move along, and I think you could see production trimmed a bit more. So,
on the sales you've made already, have you bought those back in some form?
I have not. I don't even know how to explain it. I guess a long time ago, I was a big proponent, or I should say when I was a lot younger, I'd get aggressive and buy back a lot of my previous sales. And I tell you what, by the time it was all said and done, I probably lost more than I made doing that. So I like to get 30 to 40% price before we ever plant. Then I'll price another 30% maybe during the U.S. growing season, because we tend to get a little bit of headlines, you know, and it came late this year. I was nervous, Nelly. I only had 30% of new crop priced, and we had nothing priced until the end here in these last couple of weeks during U.S. growing season. And thank goodness, I shouldn't say thank goodness, but the problems in Iowa came about the same time China started buying and really bailed us out. It wasn't that I was overly smart or anything. I mean, we had some headlines that came and caught the bears off sides, and that allowed us to get to where I like to be. I like to get to about 60% price based on our storage capacity and things of that nature. And then that gives me a whole nother year. So now I feel like I've got a year to price my remaining 40%. And I didn't re-own any of my previous sales or things like that. We had some good sales early on that first 30%, so that helped. And then, like I said, we got bailed out a little bit here. Corn still wasn't our best year on the corn marketing to this point. So,
are you expecting on the soybeans that you have yet to sell that more of those will go over the scale or be earlier rather than later sales, or will you hold on?
Yeah, that's what I think. I'm going to be looking. Normally, we may not, you know, we may just put them away and not make sales until after January, after the new year and things like that. But we may get those headlines earlier this year if China steps in here and continues to be fairly aggressive buying, and we get the headlines out of Brazil that they could have some weather issues. So I'll probably, if that happens and we take off to the upside, I'm going to try and just feather in some sales on that remaining 40-45% that we have. And then if it just continues to take off, I'll start looking to price next year's new crop a little bit heavier into that. So
yeah, that was my next question, is when do you regret the sales you've made, relatively speaking, and what do you do? And you don't. You look forward to the following year, apparently.
Yeah, that's what I do. And like I've told a lot of folks, I find it very interesting. I have some friends, very wealthy farmers, and they never sell anything on the board, and they never sell anything till after it's harvested. That's just the way their dad did it, and their dad, and hell, they've done great. And I've had some other guys that'll sell 2-3 years ahead, and they've done great. I find what's important is they all have their own, the ones that are really successful, they have their own way of doing it, and they're really good at that, and they kind of know how to navigate that boat and their water. It's the folks that flip-flop around and follow a bunch of different people and do all these different things. Man, I think they get tripped up and caught off sides a lot. So, yeah, I've tried a lot of different programs, but that one is the one that works best for me emotionally and psychologically. And like I said, I don't do that much re-ownership of previous sales. So,
any advice on corn?
Yeah, I mean, corn, we still got about 50% unpriced. I think there's going to be better opportunities. I think we're going to have to get the balance sheet down here. I was under the impression, and I still am, that we could maybe get the balance sheet, the ending stock number, to sub $2.2 billion. There's some guys talking we could get to sub $2 billion by year end. But I shouldn't say by year end, by the year end report, which is, you know, mid-Jan. And like I tell a lot of specs, it's just how do we get there? You know, like I said, the trade's a little bit disappointed here today. I thought maybe we'd see demand stay steady or maybe even increase a touch. They kind of threw that curveball in a little bit with lower and feeding residual 100 and ethanol 100. I knew that was probably happening. But, you know, I think demand could increase. I think we could see some positives come out of ethanol as we move forward. I think China's going to continue to be a bigger buyer than most people have thought. I've been saying that for the last couple of months from all of our insight. And I think the crop's going to continue to get smaller. So, you know, I think the bulls will be buying the brakes is what I see. So I think there's a good chance that you could get new crop, you know, at a level that, hell, we can at least – make a little bit of money on.
That was Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report out of Kansas City, Missouri. My last interview for the day for Commodity Week took place around 12:30 today. I called Bill Biederman at agmarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee. I asked him to give me his assessment of USDA's corn report.
Well, I think that in general, this report just came out as expected. So, you know, we don't see any surprises in this at all. We were, you know, looking for a carryover of 2.415 or so, and it came out pretty close to that. So I don't think this is a bullish report. This is a neutral report. As far as, you know, how does a farmer take advantage of that? Well, we're trading good. We took out the chart points. So if there's some follow through on the chart, then I'd wait for 380. That's the next step up. But if we can't close good today, 360 is a decent sale for right now on grain that you don't have room for. And you can buy back a call for about 8 cents and maintain ownership into the marketing year. If you've got bin space, I don't think you panic. I think you put it in the bin and wait.
What about for soybeans?
Well, this is interesting. The if you go back to the July report, we had a yield of 49.8, and they're using a yield today of 51.9, and everybody got bullish. And if you go back to the July report, they were using a carryover of 425, and today's carryover is 460. But the market never traded above 912. So with less carryover, with less yield, 912 stopped the market. And today, 912 will probably hold the market if we sell off. The difference? Perception. We were like, when's China going to buy? And now we're like, when's China going to stop buying? So that's the difference. It's a perception difference. The numbers don't match price pattern.
Does that worry you?
Well, you know, from a long-term perspective, I'm a macroeconomist. I'm looking at the dollar. I'm looking at fiscal policy, not at just the U.S. Fed, but central banks around the world. I'm looking at inflation, and I'm looking at fund money flow. I personally feel, and we as a company feel, long-term going into the spring, we've got potential to go higher across the board. But that doesn't do me any good right now. I got to look at how am I going to get through my cash flow on my farm between now and really May. And this rally in beans is above what it was before when we had less supply, supposedly. And it's a great selling opportunity, and I can generate a lot of cash. And I can turn around, I can buy an option for about 17 cents, which I've been doing, and I can do that cheaper than I can store the bean, and I own the bean right from where we're trading, and I've got 12 months out ahead of me where I can hold on and see what happens. So I improve my cash flow, and I maintain my position.
Are you a willing seller off the combine if things don't really change between now and the October report, at least?
I think the next reports we get are going to be bullish, Todd. So if you're making this, like right now, there's some quick ship bids that you would just, you know, love to take advantage of if you are able to.
Right, for corn especially.
And, oh, yeah. I mean, Cargill today in Indy was paying $4 for corn, half off drying. I mean, that's just amazing. So if you can take advantage of that, man, I wouldn't even think twice about doing it. But as long as you come back in and you put on some type of a position that holds you, because this inflation move, okay, here's an example. The hog market is so horrible fundamentally. I've got a 20,000 sow unit that I work with. They are liquidating hogs. They can't get rid of the isolines. They're getting 11 cents for their sows. And the hog market in the last 6 weeks has gone from $50 to $62.80. I mean, what? It makes absolutely no sense. That's my point. My point is that if the funds decide this is the inflation commodity they want to buy, it will do things that just blow your mind because they're throwing money into it.
The funds don't believe the Federal Reserve?
I think the funds trade Federal Reserve policy, which is inflation. And unlike any other time in history, going all the way back to World War I, during what we're doing right now on a central bank system worldwide, we're infusing more money at a higher rate than ever done before. So the consequences are either inflation or economic complete failure, which, you know, no one wants to bet on that.
That's a tough row to hoe. So the commodities then are the inflation bet. The price of food would go up,
yeah,
is what they're betting.
Absolutely. And think about this. Let's just say, just theoretically, no matter who wins the election, that there's a radical group on either side that won't accept the results. And we have some social unrest. Social unrest, you might want to sell that Dow Jones. You might want to sell the stock market. But what are you going to do? Food prices are going to go up. I mean, we had a shortage here where I live for 5 weeks when COVID started. We could not buy beef. We couldn't. Finally found a store that had it after 5 weeks of looking around, and I loaded up the whole cart. My wife was yelling at me, "You're going to have a heart attack." But you know what? I got a little bit of beef left in the freezer. So, that's my point. You know, I mean, if it gets really socially dicey, stocks, the way the America works, I don't know about other countries, you got about a 3-day supply in a grocery store.
Right.
That's the turnover on transportation. So I think there's a lot of things here that are supportive commodities, maybe negative the Dow, who knows. But I think that from a numerical standpoint, this report was neutral. So you have to take a look and say, well, how am I going to plan my cash flow over the next 6 months? And how am I going to plan my position so that if there is inflation and if that idiot that was talking to Todd today is right, that I can take advantage of that and not go broke.
That was Bill Biederman of agmarket.net. You can hear the whole of Commodity Week anytime you'd like from our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our panelists again today included Bill Biederman of agmarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee, Elaine Cub from elainecub.com, in Ipswich, South Dakota, Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report out of Kansas City, Missouri, and Jackie Vakes of TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.